Hi everyone, and welcome to 4Panel, the Geek Show's dedicated comic book, manga, graphic literature podcast. My name's Rob, and joining me today is Andrew.
Hello!
Yes, we're down on Mick because he's ill. Get well soon, Mick.
He's not going to get well soon. He has the legacy virus.
The legacy virus. So, because in my head I was thinking he's got the Lurgy, and then you said legacy virus, and then the two words mashed together, and now I've got the legacy virus. And I know it's a bad word pun. I know. You can punish me later.
I mean, to be fair, it's bad enough to make the cut into 90s X-Men comics.
True. This is very true. We've got all sorts to cover today, but we're going to start off, as always, with the news. So, what's been happening in the world of comic books, Andrew?
Not much, as always. But luckily, things have been happening in the world of comic book movies.
Oh.
God, if this wasn't an industry, we just wouldn't have a show, would we?
Well, no, we wouldn't have any news.
Or we'd actually have to spend more than, like, 10 minutes researching stuff.
Well, yeah.
Who's got time for that, Rob? Who's got time for that?
Ain't nobody got time for that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, do you know the worst thing? I found that Barak the Barbarian comic.
Oh, wow, that's... I remember that coming out.
I found a copy of it at a car boot sale, so I was having to flick through it. I was like, do I buy this or not?
I would have bought it.
I did. It cost me 5 pence.
5 pence well spent.
I know. It's kind of cringeworthy and awesome at the same time.
Just like our accidental constant tangents.
Yes.
Back on track. So, first up, the news, which I guess is more like a theoretical thing. Chris Hemsworth's contract is up as Thor.
Okay. Wasn't he, like, hanging up his cape since he doesn't have a hammer anymore?
He doesn't really have a cape either. But I think that kind of got shredded in Ragnarok.
Oh, yeah, it did, didn't it? Yeah. So, no cape, no hammer, no long blonde locks.
He's not really got much to hang up, has he?
No. Maybe that's why he's fine with ending his contract. Or has he renewed it?
Well, we don't know. It's all up in the air at the moment. But I feel like what with Thor Ragnarok doing rather well, I think there's a very good chance that he'll just renew his contract and keep playing Thor for at least a bit longer.
Yeah, and if they make it fun like they did with Thor Ragnarok and those, those little roommate things that they did as well.
Yeah, well, Taika Waititi did those roommate things, didn't he?
Yeah. So if they keep Taika Waititi on board as the person running Thor, I think I'd be happy with that.
They've got to.
Well, he's the voice of Korg, isn't he?
I think it bears repeating. Thor Ragnarok made a lot of money.
Yeah, it did.
And Marvel quite like money.
Well, not
and
only,
I imagine they want more of it.
Not only that, I mean, if Marvel wanted to do a sitcom about an alien, all right, or do an actual movie about a character that nobody had ever heard of before, they would make a lot of money by doing something with Korg. Because the number of people I have seen who are big fans of that character now.
See, I don't know. Because I feel like Korg is great, but he's also a great comic relief character.
Well,
Korg the movie would be the Joey of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yes.
Remember Joey, everyone.
But what if you had, like, a sitcom? An alien sitcom that had, like...
I mean, Joey was technically a sitcom.
Yeah, but I mean, if you had it more like a Friends type thing, where Korg was just like in his house by himself, or in his spaceship by himself, he just randomly meets like the Guardians of the Galaxy, or, you know, Thor just suddenly hits his windscreen. Oh, there was an Avengers Infinity War reference.
Well then. I mean, I was distracted by the thought of, but what if Maria Hill was his sassy roommate?
Oh, yes. Korg and Maria off exploring the universe.
I mean, once again, Marvel, call us. We have so many good ideas.
I know.
Also, you know, Chris Hemsworth is only like 34.
Yeah, I know. I'm so jealous.
He's still got some good years left in him.
He's got plenty of good years left in him. Oh.
I bet all of them are going to be good years, aren't they?
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. So, yeah, Chris Hemsworth. Long live Thor.
Heck yeah.
So, what else? What else has been going on?
So kind of moving tangentially from Marvel to Sony, but still Marvel, we've got some rumours about the Venom movie, which is an actual real thing that's actually really happening.
Yes.
But is it, Rob? Are you sure this isn't just something I keep hallucinating?
See,
and are you all just humouring me?
The Venom movie is happening, and it stars Tom Hardy. And as soon as I saw that, my first reaction was, is it going to be Tom Hardy playing, you know, Flash Thompson, or is it going to be Tom Hardy channeling Max, or is it going to be Tom Hardy in his seminal role? And my God, I wish this was the case. Is it going to be Tom Hardy playing Bronson playing Venom?
I mean, I think we've said this before, that just every film is better if Tom Hardy is in it playing Charles Bronson.
Yeah. Well, every film in history, yeah, you know, Cecil B. DeMille's Ten Commandments, just Tom Hardy in the background, posing like Charles Bronson, when you got Charlton Heston going, idolaters!
Maybe just a nice Charlie Chaplin romp.
Yes. You know, and I'm sure I saw him in, like, Akira, you know, just when Akira appears and everything starts exploding. It's just Tom Hardy as Bronson running away from the explosion.
Of course, it's that famous scene where Tetsuo yells out, Kaneda! And then Kaneda yells out, Tetsuo! And then Tom Hardy yells out, Bronson!
Yes. Oh.
Anyway, we're talking about the wrong Tom.
Okay.
Because the current rumour is Tom Holland might be popping in for a cheeky cameo appearance.
Well, he kind of has to, doesn't he?
But does he? Because Spider-Man is in the MCU now, but Marvel don't actually own the rights to Venom. So does that mean Venom is technically in the MCU as well?
Well, if Tom Holland makes an appearance, then technically yes, I suppose so.
Oh, this is... I'm going to have to build a wall with, like, pictures and red string. And also, how have I only just noticed that this now means Spider-Man and Venom, like, polar opposites, but they're also now both played by British actors with brown hair called Tom?
Okay, now that's worthy of red string and a wall.
It's a Tomspiracy.
That was bad.
It was so bad. It's not my fault, my mind's been blown.
That's awful.
I mean, I struggled enough to comprehend the idea of just like a Venom solo movie, but kind of cut off and not part of the MCU. But now maybe it is. Also, maybe Carnage is the villain.
You're going to have to remind me here. It's been a long time since I read Venom Carnage stuff, right? But what exactly was the relationship between Venom and Carnage?
Carnage is basically his son, I think. Like, the Venom symbiote reproduces asexually and just pooped out another one day.
See, I remembered it like that, but then I thought, hang on, did I dream that? Turns out I didn't.
I mean, look, if the X-Men can have a character who is a white British lady trapped in the body of a Japanese ninja, I think alien symbiotes can poop out a clone of themselves.
Yes. Oh, what else has been happening in the world of comic book movies?
Well, skipping over to DC and their animated side, they're doing another one. That was a phrase I just said. They're doing another one.
Yes, they are.
I just realised that was like possibly the most astoundingly unhelpful thing I've ever said.
I was just waiting for you to just continue on and explain what another one meant.
But yeah, the film they're doing is Suicide Squad: Hell to Pay.
Yeah. I'm kind of underwhelmed by it.
I'm quite disappointed. Basically, the plot is Amanda Waller, she's going to recruit Deadshot, Captain Boomerang, Harley Quinn, Bronze Tiger, Killer Frost, and Copperhead. Gee, I wonder which one of those is going to get killed off really quickly.
Yeah.
It's definitely Copperhead.
It's kind of obvious, isn't it?
Look at these five well-established characters, and also this other guy.
All he needs is a red shirt. Oh, I forgot, was Copperhead wearing a red shirt in the trailer?
He could very well have been.
I want to know now.
Anyway, it's that lot. They have to go steal a magic artifact from Vandal Savage. I bet it's not going to go well.
Yeah, what was it? Waller called him one of the most bloodthirsty leaders in history. Or words to that effect.
Alternatively, he is all of the most bloodthirsty leaders in history.
What, even Hitler?
Man, Hitler ruins everything. Thanks a lot, Nazis.
Oh.
Anyway, yeah, I'm kind of disappointed.
Yeah, it was
It does look like another fairly generic DC movie.
It looks like it's just kind of, oh, look, Suicide Squad, they're the flavour of the month. Let's make something else. See, Assault on Arkham, I liked, right?
Yeah, and also, I think I was kind of excited when I heard about this, because I assumed it was a sequel to Assault on Arkham, but I don't think it is.
It doesn't look like it.
Well, no, I assume it can't be, because that's set in the same universe as the Arkham games.
Yeah.
And this is set in the DC animated movie universe. I always forget that all these DC animated movies are supposed to be like the same universe.
But the thing that puzzles me about this is literally that. They've looked at it and gone, Suicide Squad, flavor of the month, let's make another Suicide Squad animated movie. You know, Assault on Arkham did really well. Batman and Harley Quinn did really well, because Batman and Harley Quinn was quite enjoyable, I've got to be honest.
That was tremendously fun.
You know.
Especially the ending of just Harley Quinn going, oh, you set him on fire.
Exactly.
And then they did. That's how they beat the Phoronic Man.
Exactly. But this just, I don't know, it's just bland. It's just so bland and boring. And, you know, do you remember All-Star Superman?
I do remember All-Star Superman, mainly because that's like one of the best comics and, by extension, animated films based on a comic ever.
Yeah, right. What was great about All-Star Superman for you?
Oh, man, that's put me on the spot. Actually, I can't remember. What was it in the movie? Because I know the best bit in the comics is when there's, like, this young girl who's about to kill herself, and then Superman just kind of flies down behind her and says, it's going to be all right.
I can't remember if that was in the movie. One of the best bits in the movie for me was when Lex Luthor, at the end of All-Star Superman, gets Superman's powers. And he finally understands how Superman sees the world. And that changes...
Yes! Yes! Oh my god, that was so good.
You know, that changes his entire outlook. He no longer hates Superman. He understands. He finally has that connection with Superman, and he finally gets it. He finally gets why Superman is the way he is. You know, it's not that...
Because we are all stupid garbage babies and need Superman to save us.
Basically, yeah. And that whole thing with the... And I love the bit with the, what was it, the Ultra Sphinx, which was hilarious.
I really want to rewatch it now, and also probably reread it.
Yeah. But the thing that got me about All-Star Superman was that it had a solid story. The whole basis of the story was Superman was dying. And spoiler for anybody who hasn't seen it or read the comic, you know, this is something that's established very early on. So it's not really a spoiler, but... It's just basically going through... It's kind of a bucket list, isn't it, when you get right down to it? All-Star Superman.
Yeah, it's basically Superman doing all the stuff he wants to do before he dies.
Yeah.
Or flies into the sun and becomes Sun Man.
He becomes Ra.
No, he becomes Dayman, Fighter of the Nightman.
And he establishes the Day Watch.
You know what?
What?
I can't remember anything from the Suicide Squad trailer.
Have I just knocked it all out of your head with All-Star Superman?
No, I mean, I couldn't... Like, I watched it a few hours ago, and even when we started talking about this story, I could barely remember anything that happened. Like, there's a bit... Silver Banshee shows up and, like...
Yeah.
Swings at a bus that Deadshot's driving.
Yeah.
And Captain Boomerang's all, God blimey, mate, I guess that's only 89 more suicide missions to go.
Oh, I do remember one bit.
That was a bad Australian accent. I'm very sorry. I apologise to an entire country.
Hey, at least you didn't say things like put another shrimp on the barbie, which is the usual go-to thing when people try and do an Australian accent, isn't it?
It is, but I mean, I was specifically quoting a thing, what you said.
I know. I do remember one bit.
Okay joke.
Yeah, I do remember one bit, which is the bit with the security guard who gets iced up.
Oh, like, yeah, and then Harley Quinn smashes his head off.
Yeah, I remember that bit because I thought...
That was a bit dark.
Yeah, I thought, that's a bit dark. This might be interesting. It might have something to it. But then, no, I was sadly disappointed.
Yeah, especially given the rest of the trailer, that seems weirdly out of the place dark.
Yeah.
I said out of the place, not out of place.
Yeah.
Hopefully. Things are going well tonight.
Well, the other thing that got me was Deadshot's mask. I suddenly thought... Are they copying Guardians of the Galaxy? Are they copying Star-Lord?
It's fine.
But yeah, it looks kind of bland. Yeah, it looks kind of bland to me. I'm not really looking forward to it. In fact, after this, I'm going to go watch All-Star Superman again.
That's the moral of this story. All-Star Superman is good. Go watch / read it.
Yes. Oh, anyway, any other news?
Nope. Yes. It was a trick question because you have news.
I do. I actually discovered this. There is something coming out, right? There's something coming out which deals with video games and manga. And it is called Manga Kakeru, right? And it's from a company called Granzella. It's going to be released. It's going to be released at some point, hopefully this year, for the PlayStation Vita and the PlayStation 4. And it is a game where you can make a manga.
I think that's just called work.
This is why I wanted to talk about it, because to me, making a manga, and to you, making a manga is work, right? It's creative. It's work. Well, in this, they basically gamified the whole thing. And now you can basically have 3D models that pause, and you can make your own manga using this Manga Kakeru. And looking at it, I'm going, yeah, but can you make manga that I would read instead of this? Because all the character models look to be like high schoolers. I'm just thinking, can you make a manga that I would actually read now?
Nope, it has to be high school romp. That's the only kind of manga, Rob.
It's the only genre.
There's literally one manga and that's it.
High school romantic comedy. That's what it's actually called.
See, you thought Dragon Ball was a thing, but nope, that's actually a high school romantic comedy.
See, you know, when I first saw the name Dragon Ball, I thought, really? That's a bit risque for a title, isn't it?
No, it's fine. It's a dodgeball-based high school romantic comedy romp.
Yes.
See, you all thought this was going to end with something dirty, but it didn't. We've done it, Rob. We're good boys.
Yes. Yes. Pardon me for my skepticism on that.
I'm still confused by the whole make a manga as a video game thing.
Well, there are a couple of trailers out for it, and it's not very clear because they are in Japanese.
Is this like Marvel's fan comic thing where you're not allowed to make any comic with, like, killer bees in it?
Possibly. Maybe. I don't know. All I know is, from what I saw of it, it looked very, very... What's the word I'm looking for? Didn't look like my cup of tea, but it's probably something that I will end up playing if it gets released. Just so I can see what all the fuss is about. Because I guarantee you, there isn't going to be any fuss. Because hardly anyone knows this is being made.
In which case, let's also not make a fuss and go for a break.
Yes. Yes, let's do that.
Ah, there really is nothing like a first leather-bound edition of a classic Victorian podcast. Hello, we're Literary Loitering from The Geek Show, and we cover literally all types of books, from hardbacks to paperbacks to sometimes the words within them. If any of these things interest you, why not pop in and give us a visit on Literary Loitering.
Hi, I'm Destiny Blue, the anime artist, and I like drawing and The Geek Show, which you are currently listening to.
Welcome back. Now it's time for comics, and we're going to kick off with Andrew.
Yep, so I have been reading Generation X, specifically Volume 1, Natural Selection, which collects the first 6 issues of the new series. And it's written by Christina Strain, with art by... it's a bunch of different people, so you have to say more than one name. Dang it, comics. You're making me do things.
You've got it bad.
So the first 4 issues are drawn by Amilcar Pina, which I've almost definitely mispronounced horrendously. Issue 5 was drawn by Alberto Albuquerque, and issue 6 was drawn by Eric Coder. So this is one of the newer X-Men series. And also kind of redundant because I think... Actually, I don't think it's ended yet. I think as of this show, it's got one more issue left before it's been cancelled.
Yeah, because you mentioned it last week. There's a lot of Marvel titles. Yeah. Isn't this the one with I-Boy in that lot?
Yes. It's basically the idea is it's Jubilee teaching a class of sort of the misfit X-Men. So you've got psychic former supervillain Quentin Quire, I-Boy, who is covered in eyes, Morph, who can transform into other people often by accident.
Yeah.
Bling, who is made of sort of a diamondy type thing. Nature Girl, who can control animals.
See, that still makes me laugh when you say Nature Girl. I'm like, what, she walks around in the nude? Is that her superpower?
I mean, judging by her character, I'm pretty sure at some point, like, someone had to sit her down and discuss why it's important to always wear clothes.
Yes.
And finally, there's a new character called Nathaniel, who can kind of experience other people's memories when he touches them.
Okay.
And like I said, it's kind of this sort of Breakfast Club-esque sort of 80s. It's a high school comedy, Rob. See, turns out it's not just the only form of manga, it's also the only form of comics.
See, calling it a high school comedy, I'm quite interested in reading it because a super-powered high school comedy sounds quite interesting to me.
Yeah, it's great. It's basically about being like a weird, awkward teenager, but also you have superpowers.
Okay, now it's sounding less interesting until the superpowers part. You had me at the weird and the awkward, but then you lost me at the teenager, and now you got me again with the superpowers.
You do know about lots of people in schools are teenagers.
Yeah, I know, but I am not.
I would go out on a limb and say the entirety of high school, at least the student body, tend to be teenagers.
I was going to say, you can't say the entirety of high school. The teachers are there.
That's how we're going to cut down on costs. Teens teaching teens.
Is this going to be some Lord of the Flies thing?
Oh, it's absolutely going to be Lord of the Flies.
No. Don't let them anywhere near the pig heads.
But anyway, Generation X. Say the first two issues or so were kind of quite slow.
Yeah.
Because it basically just spends its time introducing all the various characters. And there's a very fairly simple plot about a group of anti-mutant terrorists try to attack the school and get fought off. But then the stories after that I really liked. Because issue three is about the class kind of sneaking out after curfew to go investigate reports of a mysterious monster in the park.
Okay.
And I like, because that's like proper 80s, almost Goonies-esque kids sticking it to the man to go off on a fun adventure.
See, that I like. But now that you mention Goonies, did one of them do the truffle shuffle?
Right, no, Rob, because you see, sometimes things that are like the Goonies aren't actually the Goonies. I shouldn't show you Stranger Things, Rob. I think you'd be very confused by it.
I've watched Stranger Things already.
Oh, no.
I was not confused.
Even though they reference things without actually being those things.
Yep. See, what you've got to remember is, before I watched Stranger Things, I already had all of that out of my system from Meet the Goldbergs, where I realised that, you know, this nostalgia trip they were on was 80s nostalgia in America, not 80s nostalgia in Northeast England. And so when I watched Stranger Things, I was able to enjoy it.
No parts of that sentence made sense.
Anyway, continue.
Yeah, anyway, I really like the team dynamics in Generation X, because it is just that it's a bunch of characters. They're all very different, but they kind of find common ground. It's definitely more of a slow burn with all the characters sort of coming to understand each other.
Yeah.
And maybe care a bit more for each other. It can kind of be hard to tell, especially for Quentin Quire, who, as I mentioned, is a supervillain.
Hang on, Quentin Quire, isn't he the Phoenix?
Yes, he is. He is one of the Phoenix hosts.
Thought it was him, because he was in one of the issues of Thor, when, you know, Jane Foster was having to fight against the Shi'ar gods.
Yeah, this is kind of basically after that. And like, I think the general implication is that kind of made him decide he's going to try being a superhero again.
Okay.
But I like, Quentin Quire is definitely possibly one of my favourite characters in this, because he's very much, he obviously wants people to like him, but is way too insecure to ever, like, be nice to, or try and make friends. And I think the suit does a really good job of, like, getting that across, but without necessarily having characters just flat out explain it.
Why does he sound like the kid from Home Alone?
What?
Quentin Quire. I don't know why, but for some reason, you know, Macaulay Culkin's character in Home Alone, for some reason, the way you described him made me think of that character.
I mean, Quentin Quire also wears suits that are, like, made of $1,000 materials.
Ah, okay. Now he's sounding less like that character. No bobble hats.
And tries to psychically punch one of his classmates through a wall because they scuffed his shoes.
Now he's starting to sound more like the Home Alone kid.
Quentin Quire is just the worst person, and I love him.
See, this
also, do you know who I like in this, surprisingly?
Who?
Jubilee. Like, Jubilee is one of those characters I've never really been fond of.
Okay, I've got to ask, is she a vampire in this?
Yes, she is. She's still a vampire.
Right, excellent, because I kind of...
Not excellent, Rob, because that's a really dumb thing and they should stop doing it.
No, the reason I'm saying excellent is because I kind of got used to that from Patty Walker, a.k.a. Hellcat. I kind of got used to Jubilee being a vampire. But, you know, that whole bit where she's saying, I'll bite you, Patty's friend saying she means it. So I kind of liked that version of Jubilee. So I was hoping that Jubilee in Generation X would be pretty cool as well.
See, she is pretty cool, but I like that she's kind of got this whole, like, exhausted single mum going on.
Yeah.
Like, I think Jubilee just as a character works. Yeah, she's one of those characters that works now that she's a bit older.
Yeah.
And you can do the whole, oh God, how do I adult thing.
So it's a bit like a Spider-Woman in that sense, isn't it? Because I started reading that because you said it was really good. And the whole bit after the baby's born, you know, and she's now a mother and a superhero and everything like that, and then adjusting to that whole setup, that I found really interesting.
Yeah, it is basically the same thing of just someone whose life has, like, made them incredibly unprepared to be a mother trying to figure things out.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I think I'm going to have a read of this then.
Yeah. Oh, also the art, because I feel like we don't talk about the art enough.
Yes.
It's really weird in a good way.
Like, okay.
I like that even though they've got different artists, I think all of them manage to carry across the sense that, like, all the characters are a bit sort of gangly. I think that really fits in with the idea of them being, like, this group of misfit teens.
Okay, excellent.
They're all kind of, their limbs are a bit too long, they've got big faces, sometimes their clothes look a little bit too big, but all in, like, a very deliberate way that gets across that, you know, despite how some of them act, none of these characters are really adults yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Generation X. It's really good, and I'm very sad it's been cancelled.
I'm going to have to read this now.
I think you should. I think you'd enjoy it.
Excellent. Right, so my turn, is it?
Yep, your turn.
Right, now, I have a couple of things that I'm going to be getting off my chest today. Before I do that, though, I just want to bring up something, because I'm going to be talking about I'm going to be talking about Black Panther, The Ultimate Guide, right? But I'll bring that up because I noticed something. Marvel are doing a Colour Your Own Black Panther book. Now,
I really hope that comes with just like one felt tip and it's just black.
See, this is my point. I was just kind of, Colour Your Own Black Panther. Now, is it me or is this just kind of, could this go wrong very easily? I'm just going to leave that there for any Marvel execs just listening. Anyway, first up for me is Overwatch Anthology Volume 1, which is a nice hardback book. It's actually really nice. And I didn't expect this, because Overwatch, that game that all of those gamers are talking about, all of them are playing it and saying, oh, it's amazing, and they've all got these memes for it and everything like that. And it's had, like, short animations and stuff, and it's actually got some comics out, a collection of short stories in comic book form for different characters from Overwatch, like McCree and Trancer and Symmetra.
It's Tracer, isn't it?
Tracer, sorry, not Trancer.
I know, because the internet gets very upset about her bottom.
Well, the interesting thing about this is that it's going through stories about these characters, and they're not very long, they're very, very short, just a few pages in some cases, right? And you got McCree and Reinhardt, and it'll say, like, Reinhardt Dragon Slayer and McCree Train Rider and stuff like that. And you've got all of these different stories, and each story has a different artist ascribed to it, which is one of the reasons why when you were listening through the artist, I said, wait till you get to me, because... Yeah.
Well, you've got to give them due credit, Rob. List all the artists right now. In alphabetical order.
No, I'm going to go through backwards. The scripts first, right? This is written by Robert Brooks, Matt Burns, Michael Chu, Mickey Nielsen, Andrew Robinson, and James Waugh. And the art is by Bengal, Jeffrey Chamber-Cruz, Espen Grundetjen, I hope I said that right, Mickey Montilio, Ness Kane, Joe Ng, and Gray Shuko.
We need to apologise to so many people for mispronouncing their names.
Oh, God. I still have Edge of Venomverse to do in a bit, and that has artists. with, you know, that's a harsh plural as well.
No.
Sorry, but harsh plural.
The sorry best of the world. We're a terrible, ignorant island nation who don't know how to say things.
I'm sorry, but harsh plural sounds like something you need to see the doctor for. anyway, this is actually quite interesting. For someone like me who has never played Overwatch and really doesn't want to play Overwatch because everybody kind of, well, y'all kind of me off when you kept talking about it, you know, and you kept pushing me to play it. And that, to me, because I'm quite contrary, that made me not want to play it. If you just left me alone, I would have got around to playing it and maybe even enjoying it and maybe even enjoying, you know, the memes and stuff like that. But because you didn't leave me alone, you know. So anyway, this to me is my entry into Overwatch, and I actually quite like it. I think it's interesting, and it will definitely appeal to Overwatch fans. It's got actually an interesting story about Tracer before she joined whatever this group is, Bastion, Overwatch, whatever they're called, when she was part...
Rob, you know what the group's called?
Overwatch.
It's called Overwatch.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, like I said, I'm a complete novice to this. But yeah, when she was like a new recruit for some kind of police force type thing, and she had a nice blue suit with a nice blue hat. And
so, those are the best kind of suits and hats.
Yes, yes. And she had friends, and she had mentors in there, and all those days are long gone. It actually has another one about the robots that they have, about the robot that just wants to, you know, like, look around nature and, you know, become one with the universe, some kind of Buddhist robot.
Zenyatta, maybe?
I don't know, I can't remember. It's just some big robot that, you know, birds like to nest.
Oh, that might be Bastion then, I think. I think Bastion's the big robot. God, I've just osmosed so much Overwatch knowledge by having internet friends.
Exactly. But anyway, it's got an interesting sketchbook at the end as well, with some character models and various things like that. And this, for any fan of Overwatch, I think this is kind of a required purchase. If you're a fan of Overwatch, you kind of need this.
Even if they're a Hanzo main.
Even if that is the case. I have no idea what you just said.
I don't either, Rob. But I've seen it on the internet a lot, and it's a bad thing, maybe.
I don't know what you just said. All I know is that Overwatch fans are going to adore this. And it's only Volume 1. And with that, I go back to you, Andrew.
Something about High Noon. And that's the end of my Overwatch references.
So, see, that just...
I've been reading something.
Okay.
It's something that I've been kind of wanting to read for a while now, but we've had a bit of trouble getting hold of.
Oh.
It is Darth Vader, Volume 1, Imperial Machine.
Yeah, you've been waiting a long time for this.
I have. I've been waiting like eons for turnaround to finally give it to us. So this is written by Charles Soule, with pencils by, again, I'm so sorry, by Giuseppe Camuncoli.
Giuseppe. Giuseppe.
That's good. That definitely makes it worse.
No. If you're going to do it, you've got to go for broke.
What, just steer into the racism?
Yes.
I think that's how Brexit happened, Rob.
No. We know it's okay now because Donald Trump has done it. Nobody batted an eyelid.
Look, I'm going to let you be the one to say that. Because as a white middle-class male, I absolutely can't get away with a joke like that.
Well, leave it with me.
Okay, I'll stick on the nice safe ground of Darth Vader.
Yes.
So anyway, this is the second Darth Vader series that Marvel have done. The first one was by Kieran Gillen with Salvador LaRocca, I believe is how he says his last name, art. And as I've mentioned on our Twitter, I absolutely loved that series.
Okay.
And this is absolutely no relation to that, so I don't know even why I mentioned it. instead of being set in, like, kind of after New Hope, like that series was, this is instead set after Revenge of the Sith, so kind of almost immediately after Anakin Skywalker's become Darth Vader.
Okay.
And so, well, it starts off, the first five issues are basically the origin story of how he got his lightsaber.
Oh, I remember this now.
Yeah, basically the idea is Siths, that they can't just make a lightsaber. That the crystal they use for it has to be taken from someone else. So Vader, he sets off on this kind of big whole adventure to, well, first of all, he attacks some slavers to get a ship. Then he takes that ship, goes to a base where some clone troopers are securing Jedi artifacts. He murders them all because he's had a bit of a rough day, you know.
Yeah.
Then he gets that info and he travels to kind of a sort of remote Jedi training, sort of like a Jedi meditation retreat, where this one Jedi sort of secluded himself from the rest of the Order, and that's why he wasn't wiped out with the rest of them, and he has a big fight with him, and you know what happens? Darth Vader gets his ass kicked.
Yeah.
Like, full-on, just thrown off a mountain. And I think that's what I like about this series, is it's kind of, it's Darth Vader as he's becoming a badass.
Yeah, he's going to take some knocks, isn't he?
Yeah, he is, and that's fun to see, because kind of the traditional Darth Vader, sort of this implacable man who can just calmly walk down a hallway murdering everyone he sees.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that's definitely what I liked. I don't say that there's nothing about this series I disliked.
There's a but in there somewhere.
But I would say instead it falls more into the yeah, this is fine category.
Ah, yeah.
Like, it's a good, fun comic. But I also feel like Darth Vader is quite an easy character to write, just as a fun look at him being all cool and killing stuff.
Yeah.
Like, even, especially compared to the Kieran Gillen series, which I feel like really did a good job of capturing sort of how morally conflicted Darth Vader is. This is more just about, he's a bit miffed about the fact that he's been turned into a robot.
Yeah, I see what you mean. It is kind of... I like Darth Vader when he's more shades of grey rather than being just this kind of on-off angry switch and black and white morality.
Yeah, I mean, there's like a bit I really liked when he's got the lightsaber crystal and he's sort of trying to corrupt it, because apparently that's how the Sith get their red lightsabers.
Yeah.
But it shows him this vision where, like, so instead he puts it in the lightsaber, uses it as sort of just a normal green lightsaber, then goes and kills the Emperor, finds Obi-Wan Kenobi, and just begs for forgiveness.
Okay, now that would have been an interesting kind of what-if, wouldn't it?
It would have, but I also like it as the idea of, like, showing Darth Vader. It's kind of, it's implied that's sort of what his heart's desire is, but he ends up rejecting it as just like a, no. I think it's like the highest, no, this is all there is. But like I said, just like, this is my life now, I accept that.
So it's more a denial rather than acceptance, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very much a, I realise I've messed everything up, but I'm too far down this path now to turn back.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really cool moment.
So it's got some good bits then?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Worth reading?
Oh yeah, like, I would still recommend it. It's just, it's the second best Darth Vader series that Marvel have done.
Okay. I have to agree with you on the Kieran Gillen one. The Kieran Gillen one is really good.
I mean, also to be fair, this series doesn't have Dr. Aphra in it, which immediately makes it worse.
True, because she is kind of cool.
She is the best. And she has murder robots.
Yes, she does. Right, my turn, is it? To round us off?
Yeah.
And
bring us on home, Rob.
I am, and we're kind of going... technically, I suppose we're going full circle, technically. Because I've got Edge of Venomverse, and I suppose you want me to list the names.
All the artists. Well, I just rock back and forth screaming, but is it Marvel?
Well, it is Marvel, technically. It's got Marvel on the cover of this. But here are the writers first. Matthew Rosenberg for issue 1, Christopher Hastings for issue 2, Simon Spurrier for issue 3, Ryan Key for...
Ooh, I like Cy Spurrier.
Yeah, Ryan Key for issue 4. Clay McLeod Chapman for issue 5, and the artists are Roland Boschi for issue 1, with, where are we? Irene Strichalski for issue 2, Ty Walker for issue 3, Andre Lima Araujo for issue 4, and James Stoker for issue 5.
The Ty Walker is my favourite Star Wars vehicle mashup.
Yes. Right, okay, Marvel have their Venomverse thing, right? And I think it's just started, hasn't it?
I actually have no idea what the Venomverse is.
Right. See, I still have no idea what the Venomverse is, and this didn't help me. All I know is that this is 5 issues focusing on 5 different characters. You have, the characters are X-23, Gwenpool, Ghost Rider, Old Man Logan, and Deadpool, right?
And Old Man Logan.
Yeah. For some reason, because they've got different artists, and so the artwork changes from one comic to the next. Now, for some reason, in this, X-23 and a bunch of other kids, they're basically on the run from the authorities, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden, X-23 venomizes, as in the symbiote comes out, and so she and the symbiote are one creature, and at the end she disappears, only to find herself in front of Venom Captain America saying, "Time you forget your schoolyard fights, we've got a war to win."
Oh, I get it. It's like Spider-Verse, but instead of all the Ultimate Spider-Mans, it's all the Ultimate Venoms's.
Yes, because then it goes on to Gwenpool, who and Gwenpool has a crush on Matt Murdock, who's technically her boss, and she venomizes into kind of Dark Gwenpool, Venom-type person, who's also a little bit crazy. And apparently they live in a city full of ninjas, which suddenly reminded me of, you know, that superhero girl one that I did.
Yeah, I had the exact same thought.
Yeah. And
King Ninja popping up everywhere.
Yeah. I think that's kind of why I enjoyed Gwenpool for a while, until it just got, you know, until they decided to break the fourth wall and stuff like that. I enjoyed Gwenpool when it reminded me of Superhero Girl, when it was just Gwenpool just trying to make sense of things and trying to find a place in the world. Then Ghost Rider, which is just all kinds of crazy, especially when Ghost Rider and Venom become one thing, and then Old Man Logan, and you have the son of Hulk and the daughter of Spider-Man and what's his face? Angel, whatever his name is, I've forgotten.
Angel, like the bloke with the wings.
Yes.
Okay, the worst X-Man.
What was his name again? I've forgotten.
Oh, Warren Worthington III.
Oh, yeah, posh guy. Warren. Warren and son of Hulk and son of and daughter of Spider-Man, they've all captured Logan because apparently Logan did something and killed a bunch of kids, like any good Arthurian legend worth its salt. And so they're here to kill him by means of a symbiote trapped in a T-Rex, I suppose.
Oh, the Venomsaurus from the original Old Man Logan series.
Yeah. Anyway.
Why isn't that more of a thing, Marvel?
Well, I think Logan actually takes it out because he gets swallowed by the Venomsaurus and basically guts it from the inside and comes out as Venom Logan or Logan Venom or Lognom or Vengan. I don't know how would you mess it up? And he takes the rest of them to the cleaners.
Vanulverine.
Vanulverine, yeah. Son of Hulk is basically, you know, him and Logan are fighting each other, and Logan's trying to make peace with Banner's son, and Banner's son just doesn't want to know because he's obviously a special snowflake.
Canonically, in the Old Man Logan universe, the sons of the Hulk are all redneck incest babies.
Yeah, I know.
Because Hulk got freaky with She-Hulk.
Yeah, I know. Anyway.
Mark Miller wrote that story. Just in saying that bit of canon, I remembered, oh yeah, this is definitely a Mark Miller story.
Yep. But anyway, Logan is trying to stop the Venom symbiote from killing Bruce Banner Jr. And then a portal opens up and... while he's trying to stop the symbiote from killing Bruce Banner Jr. And he says, "I love you." And Captain America turns up, says, "Well, that's really sweet of you, soldier. Now on your feet, we've got a war to win." And then it goes on to Deadpool, who is more than happy to sign up to the cause as long as he gets to kill stuff.
Wait, no, I remember now that Bruce Banner Jr. is like the baby that Old Man Logan saves at the end of Old Man Logan.
Yep.
Basically, that's... I thought it was weird that, like, Logan was desperate to save the redneck incest Hulk who murdered his family.
Yeah. Now...
That doesn't seem very Wolverine to me.
No, it's not. Now, here's the thing. Edge of Venomverse, as a lead-in to some kind of Marvel crossover event, I can imagine the standalone issues were pretty good, you know. Pretty good at kind of dropping hints. There's a war coming. Something's going on. Something big is about to go down. All Venoms gather together. Blah, blah, blah. And on the cover is actually really cool because you've got Spider-Man Venom, and you've got Green Goblin Venom, and Iron Man Venom, and Ghost Rider Venom, and all sorts of other Venoms.
But also, that's another thing we need to circle back to.
What?
How does Ghost Rider Venom work logistically?
I don't know.
Because Ghost Rider is constantly on fire, that thing what Venom hates.
Yeah, I know. I don't question it.
I it's magic fire, I guess.
Yes, it is.
Except when the story demands that it act like real fire.
Hold up. Hang on. It's magic fire that destroys the souls of the wicked. Venom is wicked.
That's also a good point. Surely Venom should just, like, explode on contact. Although, puts on glasses, sticks pipe in. Is Venom naturally wicked, or is he, in fact, perhaps just a product of his background?
Are we going on to... are we getting Marvel involved in the nature versus nurture argument?
Yeah, that's it. Here on this, like, obscure British comics-based podcast, we're going to definitively prove whether nature or nurture defines personality.
So Venom, how many times did Stan Lee smack you when you were a child?
See, that joke was a lot funnier before certain allegations about Stan Lee's behaviour came out.
Oh, right. I forgot about that.
Now it's just really sad.
Yes.
This is going to be another one of those podcasts where we just kind of end and walk away sadly to the Incredible Hulk piano music.
It may be, but I'll see if I can redeem us. The cover is really cool. Back to the cover. All eyes on the cover. The cover is really cool. But I question some of the bits at the end, right? They've got some artwork for variant covers for Edge of Venomverse, and they've got one for Spider-Gwen, which is kind of disturbing. And they've got others for various other characters, like X-23, and they've got Edge of Venomverse cover that has the Avengers and Black Panther on. I'll tell you what, Daredevil in a symbiote looks really cool.
Yeah, I can see that.
Elektra, much less so, although there probably is a corner of the internet that finds that quite attractive. Same with the Spider-Gwen one.
Oh yeah, that's a... Welcome to Four Panel. We've suddenly become a VOR podcast.
What's a VOR?
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, Rob.
What?
Oh, Rob, you... I'll tell you when you're older.
Anyway.
Call your kids at home. Google it.
No. I refuse to Google anything you tell me. It's got something to do with eating, hasn't it? Because herbivore, carnivore, omnivore.
You're close. Like you're right on the money. And the money is covered in suspicious fluids that I wouldn't want to touch if I were you.
Okay, not going there. Anyway, Edge of... Now you can put that word in my head and it begins with a V, and it's called Edge of Venomverse.
I mean...
You bad, bad man.
The Venom symbiote does basically, like, swallow people inside of it.
Yes.
Which, hey Rob, that's what Vore is.
Leaving the Vore to one side... Edge of Venomverse.
Remember when you thought you could make this better, Rob?
Yes.
You can't. It's ruined forever now.
Superhero Girl, right? Superhero Girl is a delightful comic about a Canadian superhero girl. And it's written by Faith Erin Hicks. And you should read it, because it's delightful.
I mean, or you should read Edge of Venomverse if that's your thing.
Edge of Venomverse has standalone issues. They're good at laying breadcrumbs. I'm interested in finding out what the hell's going on, because I don't have a clue.
I'm still very sad.
No. I don't know how to recover this. Anyway.
I think that there's one surefire way to save this show.
Okay, let's end it.
Yes, just click the record button to make it stop.
Right, okay. We're ending there. Everything's available. All of our previous shows are on Audioboom and Apple Podcasts, so find them on there. Look for us. We're part of the Geek Show Podcast Network. We have a website called thegeekshow.co.uk, so look for that. We've got a Patreon on there, or you can go to Patreon and support us by looking for The Geek Show there. If you want to find us and get in touch with us and ask us questions, you know, not about what we've literally just been talking about, though, because, you know, that's strange and disturbing stuff. You can contact us on Facebook or Twitter or our own Twitter, which is, Andrew?
Yep, at 4PanelPodcast. And you know what? I will explain it to you guys.
I won't, because I've only just found out what the word means, and I'm I feel icky now, Andrew.
See, this is why I maintain the Twitter account, because I've stared into the abyss of the internet.
See, No.
And I haven't sewn my eyes shut, Sam Neill style.
Hang on, are you saying the internet is Event Horizon?
The internet is absolutely Event Horizon. And also, I'm very happy that once again we've made another Event Horizon podcast reference.
Hang on, so are you saying now then that there are a bunch of people wandering around, like, you know, like those lepers in the medieval times where they would walk around going, unclean, unclean. There's people walking around the internet or surfing around the internet with, you know, little buzzers going, Liberate tutame, ex infernis.
Bob, someone edited the entirety of Last Jedi so that none of the female characters appear.
Oh, God.
It is literally hell.
Yes. Yes, it is. And on that note, we're done. We'll see you all next week.
Thanks for listening.